Hey everybody, welcome to Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. My name is Jay.
My name is Matt.
And I'm not Mike.
And welcome to the show. I'm sorry,
actually,
Matt.
Actually, my name was going to be Typical Man creating life in 90 seconds, but I couldn't pass up being Mike. Yeah. Or not Mike.
You know, Jack,
I feel simpatico with you, or just all of the years podcasting, because when I heard the 90 seconds joke, I was like, I bet that's Jack's name.
Well, it just leaps out at you.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like if there is a lane in which Jack generally stays in 90% of the time, it's that line.
I'm not a bitter person, so stay in that lane.
I wanted to be Eddie's bar. So I like that little call out to, I'm assuming the comedian and the fact that there's a bar in Saigon named Eddie's Bar. So nice little.
So, wow. This episode.
Right.
You know, just a mind blowing, amazing. I could just keep going on and on with adjectives and superlatives, but like. Unreal episode in which you're following a character like Dr. Manhattan, who, you know, from a timeline perspective, jumps all over the place, and it's a fascinating kind of way to tell a story. And like, to me, there's no better marriage than, you know, someone who experiences existence like Dr. Manhattan and Damon Lindelof, who loves, I think, kind of being in that space, and then putting them together, like having that character and having the mind of Lindelof to kind of give us this story of kind of catching us up on Dr. Manhattan as, and everything that's kind of been going on with him, as well as the present kind of storyline, is just incredible. Like, and just tying up with the chicken and the egg thing. And we kind of said it early on, like the egg, kind of earlier on in the season, like, oh my gosh, like, just so
the egg's been there the whole time,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then just tying into something as simple, what came first, the chicken or the egg? It's like mind-blowing. It just, so good on so many levels.
And the tunnel, like, you know, who knew that, like, her comment about the tunnel, like, and how it would relate to this episode. Like, it wasn't just a throwaway word.
Yep.
That, you know, and the fact that we got Cal, who's been there the whole time, but kind of the, you know, I don't know, unsung hero. And then it just steps behind the curtain and it opens up. So,
mm-hmm. And then the title, A God Walks Into A Bar, and the way it was kind of put in the title was A Bar, so Angela A Bar, so
right,
a Jack level pun there. Like, oh my god, just so.
Jack, you've been quiet. What?
Well, I'm just listening. I thought it was fantastic storytelling. I mean, you've had three episodes in a row where people. I haven't been on the internet yet today after this episode, but I'm sure people are saying, "Oh my god, best episode so far of Watchmen." It just was fantastic storytelling. I mean, I was just, you know, listening to it, how the, you know, the wording was going on. How he's saying, this is what happens to us. And she's like, uh-huh. The acting going back and forth was fantastic. And then we got some questions answered too. So.
Yeah. Like in how it was just that single conversation in that bar in Saigon, but it also, while he was doing that, he was experiencing all those other things at the same time and tying it into the story, and really kind of, as the viewer, really sensing and feeling how Dr. Manhattan perceives time, and then tying it into that joke of what came first, chicken or the egg, or existential question, what came first, chicken or the egg, is just. I was just kind of left in awe of this episode. It was so good. And, you know, while it maybe only spent 5 minutes, you know, in the present, like, that moment is the reason why, you know, he is in love with Angela, right? Like, because he experiences it all at the same time.
Right.
And just, in terms of, you know, amazing storytelling on television, like tops, like just tops of the pops, like just so good.
It reminds me of like a game too, like in the fact that it just keeps building, you know, this episode off the previous episode, it hasn't let up, carrying through the story. And the thing is writing notes for this show is becoming harder and yeah. harder. Like I went from like 4, sometimes 8 sheets, and now I'm down to 2.
Yeah.
And they're just words. Like Heidelberg, Germany, and the Blue Danube.
Yeah.
So.
And just... Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, which again, Rhapsody in Blue. It's in blue, Rhapsody in Blue, plus Gershwin. That whole piece of music is kind of a hybrid of jazz and classical, and you know, each performance is slightly different. Like again, just God, so many. Angles to this episode that we could dive into. What do you want to pick as like the first one that we dive into?
I'd say the walks into the bar, like the main storyline of, yeah. of their introduction as characters.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's great. And it kind of, I love how it bookends where you kind of it opens with that and then closes with that. And then there's just these little moments that happen in the conversation that basically then it kind of like transports us to those moments that he's experiencing.
Sorry, my alarm. Yeah, my alarm's going off there. Sorry.
Is that telling you to go to bed?
It's my evening, you know, reminder for Christmas Advent stuff, you know, like get the things ready for tomorrow. So,
you know, I knew 10 years ago that your phone was going to go off.
I just wish I had a cooler, like tone to go off, you know, that's like the lamest one.
It's like, yeah, it's so like stereotypical, you know.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, so that totally broke open the egg there. So he's wearing a mask and we never get to see his face throughout the entire episode, which mm-hmm. I thought was also just another level to this.
I loved this it, honestly.
Episode, yeah. I mean, the way that it played with it, the way that it didn't overemphasize it, but mm-hmm. kind of also revealing his identity slowly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and I liked how, you know, once he kind of assumed this Cal character or you know, this person that died, and then when he came back, he still kind of looked like him, which I thought was cool. I think it was a neat way to, you know, allow this Dr. Manhattan to be its own thing and kind of push forward. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name. Is it Yahya Abdul-Mateen II? I saw him in Aquaman and he was dope in Aquaman. Is he in anything else? I'm not sure. But anyway.
He's in The Watchmen.
I really liked Regina King's performance in the bar, specifically in this episode. It was just really, because it's really her voice and her like kind of take on it, because he's so blank. I mean, he's kind of like a, you know, he doesn't have a lot of charm. So he's got an uphill battle.
But she's really not playing in. She's like, yeah, whatever. Type of thing for most of the episode.
But I love that it kind of, he had the moments to kind of go into his past, like, and then really kind of explaining this Europa, you know, Eden he created, and you know what he experienced as love, and the first time he saw, you know, those two having sex, and then that's who, you know, were
who he created.
Crowshanks.
It explains all of that, and it does it in a way that even if you're like, oh, clearly this is where Vite is, I mean, it's not hiding it so much, it can just be what it is, but it is also completely explained by the end of the episode, and we'll get to Vite's story. But
But then explains that manor and that castle. Why was it significant? And it was very simple in that, you know, it was this place that was important to him and his own past that he wanted to, you know, kind of bring to this Eden that he created. And why he chose that building is because, you know, he was given that Bible and they told him to, you know, whatever you do when you're grown up, create something beautiful. And this was, you know, kind of the cherry on top of that ice cream that he created in this moon of Saturn. So that was really
Jupiter.
Cool.
The moon of
Sorry,
Jupiter.
You're right.
Jupiter.
Jupiter. Yeah. Moon of Jupiter. But
I'm just protecting you there.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. But, you know, in terms of – and it's really cool, and it's something that I really enjoyed in Leftovers, but he is on another level with Watchmen. But in Lost, there was an often-used critique in that the mysteries, the questions, they just didn't really have satisfying answers. And, you know, I think a lot of that can be attributed to, you know, they were just kind of writing as they went along. It was almost 20 years ago, or 15 years ago when the show premiered. It was just a different landscape. And it's neat to see him in the modern, you know, television storytelling where, you know, he can create these interesting storylines. It's like, I wonder why that's the way it is. And then have a really satisfying answer and a really, you know, an answer that really makes sense, you know, with where's Ozymandias? Why is he there? It's like, oh, well, he's obviously, you know, he thought he saved the world, but what happens after you save, you know, existence? And, you know, he just wanted to have some sort of, you know, something else, and that's why he's there, but clearly it's not what he wanted. But all of the little answers that we got to stuff today I thought was really well done and was very satisfying. Nothing was like, oh, that's kind of lame. It's like, no, everything was really cool.
Well, it completely improves the first half of the season as well.
Yeah.
in kind of showing you like the depth in which he knows these servants, and also with what we get at the end. I mean,
subservient, right? Because he was just like, I wanted to create, you know, beings that weren't, you know, selfish, and kind of he wanted to create a place of peace and stuff like that, which I thought was an interesting take on, you know, those, I guess, beings would be kind of boring in the scheme of things, or at least from Ozymandias' perspective, can get kind of old pretty quickly.
But it's funny that he volunteered to go there.
Yeah, it's what he wanted. But it's kind of like, and I think
we were assuming that he was being held prisoner there, right?
Yep. And I think we've met plenty of people that complain about different things, but guarantee if they were put in the situation where they wish they could be in, would be miserable pretty quickly if they actually got what they say they wanted, right?
Oh, sure. Even having servants that do whatever they want, so for you, and never questioning.
Well, they make the same crappy cake. I mean, that would drive anyone crazy.
Well, eventually they'll put a horseshoe in it. So.
And they'll get it right.
With 7 candles on the cake?
Yes.
7 candles, horseshoes, good luck. 7's
so
a
he
good,
still has,
lucky number.
He still has 3 years to get to...
I'm just saying that the horseshoe is good luck, and so is 7 candles, right? 7 is a lucky number.
It is a lucky number, yeah.
So maybe that's why the...
You got some notes over there, Jack?
Yeah.
I'm just looking back and forth.
Oh, okay. The timeline thing, that kind of threw me, because as they were in that bar scene, there's all of these numbers being thrown out. And I'm like, okay, if this is 22 years from this and this, and finally they just say it, you know, it's like, oh, it's 2009. And yeah, right?
I was told there'd be no math.
There's math all over my notes, so we can just scratch that out. And but it's 10 years ago, so it's 2009, and like Jay said, there's still 3 more years of whatever Veidt has to go through. Yeah. So,
well, like, she also tells him that she hates Dr. Manhattan and why.
Oh, yes, that's right.
I thought that was a really good scene where she tells Dr. Manhattan why she hates him.
Yep.
You know, you destroyed the village of the Viet Cong, and this guy, the puppet guy, and So anyway, I enjoyed that scene.
Sometimes the, you know, the previously on stuff can bother me because, you know, it's obviously revealing something that's going to be of importance. But in this one, I thought it did a good job of setting up why. Lost my train of thought there. There was something in that opening sequence, though, where it set up masks. I'm sorry, coming back to masks. The quote from the previous episode, and so thinking in terms of Dr. Manhattan wearing a mask and atoning for this pain or this trauma that he caused her is an interesting play on the whole mask theme, I guess, mm-hmm. because for the most part, Manhattan never wore a mask. And I think either we talked about it last week, but the idea that as it progresses, he loses more clothing and his connection to humanity. Mm-hmm. Here we see him taking on humanity completely. Mm-hmm. Like at one point I wrote down Superman 2. Like, is this the plot to Superman 2? You know, he basically gives up being, you know, omnipotent and mm-hmm. is kind of just human.
But even okay, so then answering what happened when 7th Cavalry attacked him in the first place, right? It was like this instinctual reflex, and he zapped him. And there's a little bit of self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, he's out there and saving Angela. She's trying to save them. It's like, well, he could just zap anywhere in the world immediately, so just do it now if you know you're going to get taken away. So maybe I do think there's probably something to
his plan.
Yeah, to his plan, or I do see, you know, something just in my own mind thinking about, you know, being immortal, living forever. Like, to me, it kind of life loses its meaning if you live forever, because then, you know, what is time? Time does kind of become irrelevant, and then are you truly experiencing anything in the moment? There is no end to that life. And maybe, you know, for Manhattan, he welcomed not knowing, but then also maybe he's welcoming, you know, his eventual end in that, you know, if he can die or he can be killed in some way, it might give his life more meaning from his perspective, possibly.
Yeah, and there's that great Queen song, Who Wants to Live Forever, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, that's where my mind was going when you were talking about that. Who Wants to Live Forever.
But right, and to me, actually, if, like, what would be the thing for somebody that's omnipotent and, you know, ever living, whatever, like, for him, right? Like, what is there to, so he might welcome the possibility that he could die or something like that, or the possibility that he doesn't know what's going to happen next. I feel like that would be, you know, an adventure for him, or something at least different, or a change of pace.
I think the hard part would be knowing what's going to happen next all the time.
Right? Yeah.
That would drive me crazy.
Well, and it drove her crazy because that's their fight that he talks about. Yeah. That happens 6 months from there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. From
It was kind of hard to keep up with all of the different.
Ask me to leave.
Well, there was kind of three. There was the in the bar 6 months from there. And then kind of what nine years and 6 months from that point was our kind of three big storylines, not counting the Adrian fight, which was that 7 years after he left there. So 7 years after 2009. So 2016 is where we were at with the post credit scene with Adrian fight. So there's your timelines. Correct. There. You have 2009, which what was, Vietnam Victory Day. Anyway, so it was 2009 that day, 6 months from that.
75 or 76, right?
It was, I thought it was 76 because her birthday was 76, and that was an easy thing for me to remember. Okay. So
it was 22 years from that. And then 2009, 6 months after, and that's where he went to Adrian Veidt. Got the little ring thing. Also had the conversation with Will Reeves. And then also had the conversation with Will Reeves and Angela at the same time in 2019, as well
which gives us our answer.
Which gives the answer to how did he know?
Oh,
about
my gosh.
The,
yeah, because I thought it was just last week or the week before we're asking, how did he know?
Right.
How did he know? And it's like, because there was no clear reason why he would know. And you find out that Angela gave him, told him.
Yeah. And then obviously,
I said, wow. To me, that was the best scene in the whole episode. Because I was like,
oh, yeah.
Wow. And like you were saying earlier, Jay, how these questions are being answered. And they're not like half-assing it. It's like,
yeah.
Wow, man, I didn't see that coming first. And
it was a real Desmond Penny.
It was well done.
It was a real Desmond Penny moment, too, like with the whole time jump, you know, and them talking at the same time, but like apart. I don't know. I just, that was an interesting way of, and then, of course, like they mentioned the whole paradox. I was surprised that Angela didn't say something about eggs and tell my grandfather to eat an egg.
Well, there's one thing where she said, I told him, I told him the answer, and he says, is that bad? And that's the last day we hear of it.
Right.
Or was that a bad thing? Or is, because he kills Judd. And he says, is that
chain of events in motion, right?
Yeah. Right. And she goes, is that a bad thing? He goes, is that a bad thing?
And
so,
yeah, we don't know yet, right? But I love how it ties into the what came first, the chicken or egg. She caused this whole entire thing, chain of events, to happen. And it's, yes, she did, but is that a good or bad thing? Yeah, like what? And we don't know. We don't know the fallout and the ramifications of that. Absolutely. But it's a really cool way to answer that question. And again, it makes, and since we have that backstory, she took his nostalgia, and we know why even saying Cyclops is probably something that's going to really kind of hit him in a certain way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, okay. And well, get into it.
Yeah, he would totally investigate it. Like, even if he's an ex-hero, that's like, you know, that would totally spark his interest. And I mean, you get visited by Dr. Manhattan and time talk to your granddaughter, whatever, man. Like, it's, he's gonna follow that lead, I would think.
Being in Nelson's home after he passed away, I thought was interesting.
Yeah. No, that was a nice, I don't know, tie-in, I guess, to like, I guess the whole Minutemen and.
Yeah,
kind of. It's funny because it. Well, he's just an associate, you know, or something. It's like.
Something I really liked about this episode, and I can't remember which issue of Watchmen it is. I have the book graded, actually, comic book graded, but it's the one where it kind of goes in and it tells the Watchmen's backstory. And this episode kind of had a similar echo to that, where he's kind of going back into his past and then his present and his future all at the same time. But what I loved about this episode is just how it also drove the story forward in a really like compelling way. And you know, now we're set up for the season finale where, you know, 7th Cavalry is, you know, they got Dr. Manhattan, and they can't, we don't want them to get all the power of Dr. Manhattan. He also talked about how he could pass on his powers to someone else, which is terrifying, right? That's basically, you know, the power of nuclear weapons times 100, being able to pass on someone else is terrifying.
They used just a big red light to get him. So that's all you got. It's like, who knew? They're like, oh, opposite of blue. Well, actually, the opposite isn't red, but still.
Nice guy.
Red shift, blue shift.
So the one thing we didn't get in this episode is the connection to Lady True, right? Because she kind of set this chain of events in motion in terms of Angela going back, smacking him in the head to take out the ring. You know, whose side is she on? It would seem, just me watching this episode and kind of reading where it's going, that, you know, Will Reese maybe went to Lady True and kind of sold her on this entire thing. And that there's what is that alliance? Because Dr. Manhattan, you know, spoke of this alliance with Will Reeves. He sent the kids there with the grandfather as well. So he may have set up all this stuff in conjunction with Will Reeves, and Will Reeves also working in tandem with Lady True. Seems to me to be how she's going to get, is being pulled into this story.
Well, isn't she trying to change history?
Well, she's trying to stop 7th Cavalry, right? That's what she's told.
So
that's what we've been told.
Yeah, so maybe that's what she's trying to do. Is she'll change what happened after
she's got
destroyed or captured Dr. Manhattan.
My only thing is that I still go, like, the equipment that they're using has her logo on it. So I still wonder, like, is there a connection between her and
we theorize she didn't like Dr. Manhattan, right?
Well, I had just put that out there, but it just makes me wonder, though, why do they have her equipment? Because it has her logo on it, unless they stole from her, like, you know, some Back to the Future kind of thing.
Well, maybe she's using the 7th Cavalry to capture him, and then she's going to destroy and change everything from there.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe because I don't think they could just walk in and get her. She's not stupid, so there's no way she's going to let them just walk in and steal her equipment.
So do you think we're going to get her backstory in the next episode? Because, I mean, she seems to be the biggest character that we have the most.
Well, if she's going to be important to this, I guess we'll have to, because this is the final episode, right? It's a final season finale, so.
Yep.
Or we don't have to, because, you know, there's potentially more seasons to come, right?
It did just say season. It didn't say series. So, yeah. Who knows? But I feel like we're going to get something, because at least Damon on the other podcast, which I won't mention.
What, the official podcast?
Yeah.
You can mention it.
Okay. I thought maybe it was Jack that was giving me grief about.
No, I would never do that. Oh, okay. Go ahead and mention every podcast you want.
Yeah, okay. Jack's very, like, you know, isolationist, Jay and Jack Network first, but me, I'm fine.
I just want to build a wall around myself.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
All right. I just know that he had mentioned about having it feel as complete as what the comic did, so that these episodes were, you know, to be viewed together, very similar to, like, how there's only the 12 issues, you know,
and it feels
nine.
Like that, and, you know, that's his intention. I think he's nailed it. You know, and for a season two, I think it could be, I think it could very well be whatever story that he's spoken about, maybe just, like, giving it to somebody else, could want to tell. But I think that's what's made this season so compelling, is it is a cohesive story from beginning to end that we're getting, and it's done so well where, you know, even if we do get questions and there's mysteries, we're getting answers to them at, you know, breakneck speed.
I think we said last week, it's just like a long movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's one part I wrote down here. The picking of the cadavers, when we see that scene, and that apparently happens, I guess, in that 6 month after period. But we see the different bodies, and it's weird that she didn't pull out this body first, I guess. I don't know why she was hiding this body. Like, did she just assume that John wanted a white body? Like, or I don't know. Like,
probably, right? She's probably like, well, that's who you probably identify with. But then, you know, so I don't care. Like, I'm a blue being.
Well, at this point, does she care about him yet?
I think so, right? She's
going into the morgue. I mean, you know.
I know, but is it like she's still like, you know?
No, I think at this point she's
okay.
But anyway, I
wasn't getting that vibe that they were hitting it off yet.
Well, she was the one that proposed a body, right?
Yep.
So, I feel like that's a pretty firm step into, like.
Well, she can't go anywhere with a guy she hates, and everyone's going to know who he is. Be like Norm from Cheers.
there's a scene when they're looking at the cadavers, and it's the first time we get to see Calvin. From one side, it looks like there's this bluish kind of hue on his neck.
Yes.
And I was wondering about that because he apparently had a heart attack, you know, sudden or what have you. Did Dr. Manhattan choose this body? Because he, I mean, it seems kind of weird. Like, I don't know. Like,
you're saying he killed him?
Maybe. I mean,
he's killed before, so.
Right. Like,
what's one more?
Maybe. It just seemed weird that it had this bluish hue on the neck, almost like it was in the blood.
Like he choked him or something.
Well, she read the report. She said heart attack. So.
Well, they couldn't do an autopsy though because they didn't have any money.
Mm.
Remember that? I thought she said that.
That's why they pick these people because you know they have names, social securities, whatever. But you know, no family, no next of kin, and they're just going to be you know. Cremated and ashes spread over Saigon. So, you know, take your pick.
Right. So. Well, just putting it out there.
No, I think it's an interesting thought. There's no reason that can't be true, right? Because he's kind of omnipotent. He's everywhere at once at all times. So, yeah, it could work.
I go with it.
Any other thoughts about this episode before we turn over to our listener feedback, gentlemen?
Oh, you want to talk about the inn?
And Veidt and Antarctica, like,
yeah,
like Veidt, like, was looking pretty haggard there. And
right, because if you think about it, it's been 24 years, whatever it's been.
Yeah, it's 2009, basically.
And who wants tomatoes rubbed in their face?
Oh no, I'm sorry, we're jumping to the end. That's oh right.
No, but him being in Antarctica, that's 2009, so 24 years.
So he's wearing this jacket. And it just kind of felt to me like he was still kind of trapped in either the late 80s or 90s or something like that. Like,
yeah,
he
right?
felt
all that,
like out of...
All that pressure, all that tech was still 1985.
Yeah. And then he's collecting the squids out of the atmosphere or something like that. Like,
well, he's setting it up, and he's the one that's been sending it to the Earth to kind of keep people in line. Which then makes me ask, like, who's doing it in his stead? And still in 2019, maybe he sets it up on autopilot or something.
But... Right. Huh. Okay. Well, that's interesting because, I mean, it also explains kind of, like, why there's this thing that's these storms of, like, mm-hmm. you know,
he's
squids.
Doing it. I think he's putting him over Madagascar was the map that he had there.
Hmm. That's pretty interesting. Okay. All right. What else did I have in my notes here? John comes back as Blue Cal. I had that written in my notes, so I thought that was interesting. That
I thought it was cool. I thought it was a neat.
Yeah.
Like again, we kind of already been attached to Cal, and he's kind of taking on this form, and I think it allows this pre-Angela Dr. Manhattan to kind of be that Dr. Manhattan. This is a different Dr. Manhattan, and he's evolved and changed because of Angela, and I think. Him keeping that form works for me.
Yeah.
Well, I like when the kids were yelling, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy," and there's a man walking on the pool. And Angela goes, "That is your dad."
And he said, "This is important for you in the future," which hasn't happened.
Right?
So I'm curious to see what that's going to be about.
That kind of made me wonder too, because they kind of made a point. At least twice now that he can walk on water. Mm-hmm. So,
and he said the pool then being hit, or it's going to be in handy in the future. So,
I also wanted to mention just about his past and the fact that as John, as a boy, witnesses sex and then he gets a Bible, which is a really weird way to encourage kids to read. But then the fact that his his creations are kind of like his Adam and Eve, which, you know, she mentions Genesis. So there's just a nice
he drops the apple.
Oh yeah. There's the apple in that scene. Great. Yeah. I like that. Huh? I just liked how that tied that whole storyline tied together and kind of made a nice little circle as far as like his creations becoming this Adam and Eve based off of like kind of what he saw as a child,
right.
Who gave him a Bible and then he creates this Eden with them in it. Like it's its own Bible. I don't know. It's strange, but cool. I just love, So much to like about this episode, and I can't wait to rewatch it.
Yeah, me too.
There was nothing to hate about it, that's for sure.
Yep.
And so the end, you wanted to talk about the end and the whole, you know, will you stay master, which I thought that was kind of a cool way that it cut into the credits so that you kind of knew something was coming.
Yeah, like the and music. Then, because it's obvious they're still traumatized from Dr. Manhattan leaving, and that's why they don't want Adrian Veidt to leave. And it's curious to see, okay, he's got this horseshoe, so he's going to dig his way out, like Shawshank Redemption style.
He needs a poster.
He's got 3 years to do it, right?
Right. Yeah. I'm assuming that we're going to see him.
It took Andy like 20 years, didn't it?
Adrian Wright's a smart guy. He can figure it out.
All right. Okay.
So the book that he's reading, Fog Dancing, is by Max Shea, who is the author the fictional author that wrote Tales of the Black Freighter. So there's this.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, interesting insular connection there. So, I'm just still thinking about Veidt and like we learned that his plan B and the plan A and the whole ring and this idea of like he had another way, I guess. I thought that was kind of an interesting like way to like reframe the first Watchmen. You're basically like, oh, that was my plan B. You know, I don't know. I just, it was fun. I thought it was a good way to set up.
It was nice to kind of see an aftermath of the original comic book series and what Adrian Veidt did. And 24 years later, like he did this thing, but probably what he thought was going to be the aftermath is not, you know, nobody's praising him or whatever. So anyway, it's pretty cool.
Right.
And Jeremy Irons at the end, though, I just love how haggard he looks. Like,
no makeup.
All right. Well, that is what we thought about the episode. Now it's time to go to what you all thought with some listener feedback. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with some listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. Have some emails to jump into. First up here is Chris from Buffalo. This is a couple days ago, so this is not related to this episode.
Unless he knew.
Unless he's Dr. Manhattan.
There you go.
I've got a theory regarding who set the 7th Cavalry in motion. We'll have to see how things play out. In the original comic, as part of the between chapter segments, Veidt is being interviewed. There's a question regarding the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and Veidt responds that with something like the 7th Cavalry is on the other side, easily looked over by even someone looking for details in the book, links a huge clue to his master plan. Perhaps he wants Dr. Manhattan clearly out of the picture, and is using the 7th Cavalry as his pawns to accomplish that goal. I do believe Veidt is somehow trapped in the statue as well after his trial, however, that may also be part of his plan. Set in place prior to his exile to Europa. Loving the podcast, guys. Chris from Buffalo. Mm. So now that we know why Veidt's there, and it wasn't necessarily an exile, even though it turned out to be, and maybe that's what Dr. Manhattan knew it would be, you know.
Well, I think Dr. Manhattan would know.
Yeah. But, you know, Veidt asked for it and wanted it. And again, 24 years.
He gave him an option, but I'm sure that Dr. Manhattan knew what was going to happen.
I wonder if he still thinks Veidt's trapped in the statue. I think the statue's made out of chocolate. Once you get past that gold.
I'm down with that.
But thanks, Chris, though, for the email. Right. I got nothing to say. I'm sorry.
All right. Last email here is from Ethan.
Ethan.
Man, that was great. I can see why the post-credit did not belong in the main episode. It was Dr. Manhattan's volume of the comic series that is the show. The whole episode was his point of view. The chicken and the egg pool scene is stuff of legend. Recency bias, hyperbole, I know. No, I agree. It was just like, oh, man. Mm-hmm. So good. Totally engrossing the whole time. Agreed. Have a good week, Ethan. P.S. No Baby Yoda merch until March. Boo. listen, just enjoy this period of time in which there is no Baby Yoda merch, because soon enough there will be nothing but Baby Yoda merch. So just savor this moment in history.
Yeah, because, you know, 10 years from now, when there's no plastic left, people are just going to be sucking out a Baby Yoda head, you know, bobble kind of things, you know. And don't count Watchmen out, because I think in episode 9 we're going to see Dr. Manhattan as a baby, and it's going to be just as cute.
It's going to be cute as hell.
As Baby Yoda?
No, it's just a baby Dr.
Baby
Manhattan.
I know, baby Dr. Manhattan, but is it going to be like maybe takes Yoda's form?
No. He's just like a cute little blue baby with big blue eyes.
And those will be ready for you at Walmart.
It's going to be tough to beat. It's going to be tough to beat Baby Yoda.
Yeah, it's the ears and the eyes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for giving your feedback. It's always a fantastic part of the show. Enjoy getting it. If you'd like to send in your feedback, WatchmenJJM@gmail.com, as well as our phone line at 385-309-0311. We record the podcast right after the episode drops.
Well, not right after, but
relatively.
A little after.
We used to record Lost like an hour, I think, after it dropped, maybe half hour. But anyway, definitely you have a moment to get that stuff in if you do want to make it to our show.
Are we recording live next week for our patrons?
I believe so. Next week for our finale episode, we'll be broadcasting it live for our patrons. At what level do we do that for, guys? It's been a while.
At the $5 million level.
$5 million? Okay. So,
really,
if you really want to experience it live, is it $15 or the $5? That's what I don't remember.
I think it's 15.
For our $15.
I'm cool with the $5. You want to do it since we only have the East Coast?
No, it's fine. It's $15. We want to like shortchange people that give that much. So if you do want to join us live for the show, and you are a $15 or more patron, boom, you're already there. If you would like to be, you can say you're at any level. You can pump up to that $15 mark, and you'll get access to it next week. You know, if you want to dial it back down for that, that's fine too. You know, it's, listen, whatever you can contribute at any time, is what helps make these shows possible. And we're thankful for every penny. And I want to take a moment to thank the people that make this show possible. Our patrons, especially Tackle Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, and Ed the Creepy Letter Carrier. If you're using Amazon, it's the holiday shopping season, and there's no better link to use for your shopping than jandjack.com/Amazon. It'll be the normal Amazon that you know and love, but a small percentage of all of those sales will go to the J and Jack production fold. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JandJackGroup, where we have fun TV show discussions about all different types of TV shows, including Watchmen and Mandalorians on there as well. You can chat with fellow-minded enthusiasts of television shows. We also do other podcasts on this network. I believe Dancing with the Stars, is that done yet? Still a thing?
No, it's over.
Over. There you go. Survivor with Jay Jack and Colleen.
Way to pay attention there, Jay. It's
I don't watch Dancing with the Stars. That's,
I said it last week. It was the last. It was over.
He does have you there.
I was in New York. I was in Manhattan. So it was just,
you were living that high life.
It's a different time.
That's right. You were in Dr. Manhattan's hotel. Yeah. And
I'll be in Manhattan again later this week. So it'll be fun. Either way, check that out. It's already over. Check out Survivor with Jay Jack and Colleen. There's only a couple episodes left of that, so we'll be closing out that season. And Owen and Beru's Barbecue covering The Mandalorian. Matt, when are you guys recording your episode 5, The Gunslinger?
Tomorrow. And I'll just say that Mike Bloom is our guest this week. So
that's a big get.
So I couldn't get him for the first episode, so that was a real bummer.
Did you have to go with, like, you know, because then you asked me and I was like, oh, I can't do it. So what was your third backup, or maybe your fourth backup?
Well, then I was like, hey, Ralph, are you available? And then no, we had Jack, and Jack still likes to claim that it was the most downloaded episode in the history of all Lost podcasts, apparently. So thank you for everyone.
Well, not the history of all Lost podcasts, but of Owen Beru, probably, yes. But
no, I see, what I need to do now is Everybody needs to go listen to my episode on Owen Bruce because I was on this past week. So definitely go check that out and make mine.
But Mike Bloom is a good get because he's so busy.
Yeah, exactly. That's a tough schedule to get on there. But he is a wonderful person to listen to. So excited that he's going to be on Owen and Brew's Barbecue this week. And then the Rise of Skywalker coming out in a couple weeks. So I assume you guys are going to be covering that as well.
At some point, somehow we're going to squeeze it into our schedule. Mainly, you know, we'll figure something out. So if my kids end up appearing on an episode, then you've been warned. So,
well, still, I'm hearing good things, you know, from Ralph. He has a couple friends that have seen it, including had a conversation with Michael Giacchino, and he said he really enjoyed The Rise of Skywalker. So cool stuff abounds there. I'm excited about it, and I'm sure
will Nick like it. That's all I care about.
Listen, we just need to figure out what person on the internet's gonna like write a critique about it, and then Nick will just regurgitate that exact thing a couple days later.
Wow.
So we don't have to worry about knowing what Nick's gonna say.
Wow.
this is the after the credits rolled part of our show.
Anyway,
Nick's just sitting in Colorado. The hell
does
hit me?
He's not listening this long to the show. But yes, check out all of those podcasts as well as Ramblecast After Dark and the broadcast still going strong. I'm sure you guys are doing a lot of holiday themed episodes right now, right? Some type of versus.
Oh yeah.
Sure.
Related, yeah. Like favorite Christmas cookies or something. I don't know. But check it all out. JaneJack.com or JaneJack.com/iTunes. That'll do it for this week's episode. We'll see you all next week for the finale of The Watchmen. Holy moly, it's going to be amazing. And we'll be recording it live. We're doing it live.
Okay.
For our
Can I just ask one real quick question?
Yeah.
We've had 3 weeks, and all the episodes have been good, but three straight weeks of just great television.
Yeah, straight fire.
Yeah.
Okay. Can they go the distance? Can they go to the ninth inning? Can they finish it strong?
Yep.
Or will it be like, oh, that just kind of let me down?
They haven't yet, so I'm going to say, yep, it's going to be awesome.
I'm very hopeful, so very optimistic. So
all right, I'll be very hopeful too.
Look, this show was one in an egg million.
I see what you did there. On that note, awesome away go and goodbye.
Bye.